Hare Krishna. So we start with the 13th chapter now. So the 13th chapter is called as either Purusha Prakriti Yoga, or it is often called as Kshetra Kshetrajna Vibhaga Yoga. So there are six essential questions with which Krishna starts, with Arjuna starts. Now, with respect to the flow of the chapters, there is a conceptual connection between the chapters, although there is not necessarily a linear connection between the chapters. What is the difference between the conceptual connection and a linear connection? Linear connection means that, say, one statement and the next statement, if they come in a line and they are connected to each other, that's a linear connection. So, in that sense, from 12.20 to 13.1, Arjuna's question that will come, there is no linear connection. There are no specific words that Krishna has spoken in 12.20 or anywhere before that, which provoke the question of 13.1. Though there is no linear connection, there is a conceptual connection. Just like I explained at the start of chapter 11 also, that in 9.15 when Krishna was expanding, 9.15 was the verse which talks about Vishwarupa Upasana, Devopasana, and then Brahmanopasana, Ahangaropasana it is called, worship of oneself as the absolute. So that was expanded into the question of the 11th and the 12th chapters. So now, Arjuna in this verse, in this chapter at the start, will ask questions which are generally used by jnanis in their discussions. So Arjuna is living in a culture, where a lot of philosophical terms are being, philosophy is discussed. What the Bhagavad Gita offers is all the various philosophies in a sort of coherent and progressive symphony, symphony sort of. In a progressive framework it's offered. So just like if we have a class on Mayavad sometimes, then we may ask some general question about Mayavad, even if that question is not directly related with the class. It's related with the broad topic of the class, but it's not related with something directly spoken in the class. So similarly, that means that's the meaning of this example of a conceptual connection. Conceptual connection, so overall it is a connection with the topic. So the previous chapter talked about the comparison between personal and impersonal forms of worship. That was the question which Arjuna had asked. Now Krishna will ask for some further clarification. Arjuna will ask for some further clarification about generic terms which are frequently used by jnanis. And of course, these terms are also used in Sankhya. And we'll discuss a little bit about Sankhya when we come to it in 13.6 and 7. Till then, but Arjuna is basically classifying terms which are generally there in the discussion in learned philosophical circles within Vedic culture. Arjuna Vacha. All of you have your Gita with you? Also, too many things open. Yeah. Arjuna Vacha. Prakritim Purusham Jaiva. Kshetram Kshetrajna Eva Cha. Etad Viditum Icchami. Jnanam Jnayam Cha Keshava. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Idam Shariram Kaunteya. Kshetramitya Vidiyate. Etadyo Vetitam Prahu. Kshetrajnaititadvidaha. So, Arjuna is asking six basic concepts. Prakritim Purusham Chaiva. What is Prakriti? What is Purusha? Kshetra Kshetrajna Eva Cha. Who is the knower and what is the field and what is the knower of the field? And Jnana and Jnaya. So now when multiple questions are answered, Krishna decides to answer not again in a linear sense, answer first question first, second question first. Krishna chooses to answer in a way that slowly develops the concept. So that's why first he will answer the second part. What is Kshetra and Kshetrajna? Then he will answer what is Gyan and Gaya. And finally he will come to what is Prakriti and Purusha. So he chooses to answer in a slightly different way, because that's how we'll see as the Gita progresses, that's how the thought flow is developed. And at the end, by the end of the chapter, in fact, even before the end of the chapter, by 27th verse itself, all the answers, all the terms are clarified, and Krishna then gives a further sort of bonus, classifying, putting it all together in what section that is called a Shastra Chakshu or Jnana Chakshu. So what he is asking, what are these six terms? Edat, etad, veditum, icchami. I desire to know this. So Krishna starts by describing idam shariram, this body which we have, kshetra itya vidiyate. This is the kshetra, this is the arena. Kshetra can literally mean field, it can mean arena of action. And kshetrajna, one who is a knower. Etad yo vettitam prahu, one who knows that. Now, this verse doesn't tell exactly who is it that knows that. It just says, one who knows that is called as Kshetrajna. So, there is a little bit of ambiguity, who is that knower? But that will become clear in the pre-verses. But, etad yo vetitam prahum Kshetrajna iti tadvitaha. So, let's have a look at the... Now, when Krishna answers these questions, while we are discussing the concepts, let's recite the next verse also, because the understanding of Kshetrajna depends on understanding the next verse also. Kshetrajnam chapi mam vidhi sarva kshetreshu bharata kshetra kshetrajnayor jnanam yattaj jnanam matam mama. So, this according to me is Jnana. So, actually in a sense, Krishna sort of very shortly gives the answer of Kshetra and Kshetrajna. And then he introduces this term of Jnana here. This is Jnana, but he will elaborate that later. So, Kshetrajnam cha apimam vidhi. I am also the Kshetrajna. And the Paramatma Sandarbha of Jiva Goswami begins with an elaborate analysis of this verse. What does this verse mean and what it does not mean? In fact, even in Shankaracharya, he uses this chapter extensively to establish Mayavad. So, especially this verse is there. So, Ramacharya refutes Mayavad primarily through his Sri Bhashya. Sri Bhashya is his commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. So, Shariraka Bhashya was the commentary of Shankaracharya. And Sri Bhashya is the first major refutation of that. And that is very exhaustive. Now in general, the acharyas write different kinds of books for different kinds of audiences. So, for example, we'll see that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote books like Krishna Samhita and Chaitanya Shikshamrita, which are for like sophisticated Bhadraloka audience. They are educated and they are not interested in singing and dancing and this sort of, they think this is sentimentality. They want solid philosophy. So he writes that kind of books for them. And similarly, but there are common people who can't understand this philosophy, but they like to sing and dance and hum to themselves. So for them, he wrote his Vaishnava songs. This doesn't mean that the Vaishnava songs can't be appreciated by intelligent people also. But it may require time for them. That's not what they will appreciate initially at least. So, like that, Ramanacharya, his Sri Bhashya is primarily for scholars. His Gita Bhashya is relatively simpler. He doesn't go too much into polemics. Polemics means argumentation. You remember I discussed that there are three kinds of discussions. Polemic, ironic. Remember? Polemic means I try to prove that you are different from me and you are wrong. Polemic means proving that you are wrong. Ironic means both of us think similarly only. It's more of conciliatory. And apologetic means I am right. So apologetic has got nothing to do with apology. They're two different words. So that means there's a whole branch of theology which is called as apologetics. So apologetics means what I believe I try to explain to others. So there is polemic, ironic and apologetic. So most of the polemic presentations of Ramanujacharya are in his Sri Bhashya. And his Gita Bhashya, he's simply clarifying concepts. He doesn't get too much into discussions and debates. Too much analysis. That's why his commentary is not very big. It's deep, but it's not very big. But two verses in the Gita, he gives also long commentary. This is one of them, 13.2. And also 2.17, Avinashita Tadviddhi. The two main verses where he goes really into some conceptual analysis. And Jiva Goswami largely follows Ramanujacharya. You know, Jiva Goswami, generally when he starts his Andarbhas, he primarily offers his obeisances to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he offers his obeisances to various Sampradaya Acharyas also. But he doesn't quote much from those Sampradaya Acharyas. Except in the occasions where certain arguments are especially relevant to the points that he is making. And he quotes much more from Ramanujacharya than he quotes from Madhvacharya. So our philosophy, which is Chinta Bheda Bhed, is much closer to Vishishta Advaitavada than it is to Dvaitavada of Madhvacharya. So anyway, the point I am making is that this is a very important verse which has been a subject of lot of discussion among the Acharyas. And what is the cause of the need for the discussion? As I said, the previous verse, if you just look at the Sanskrit, it says, the knower of the field is Kshetrajna. So who is the knower of that field? That is not mentioned. And then this verse seems to, if you just let it logically flow, this seems to say, I am the knower. The knower of the field is Kshetrajna. And Kshetrajnam cha apimam vidhi. I am the Kshetrajna. And the Kshetrajna for all bodies. Sarva Kshetreshu Bharata. And one who understands this, he is a knower, he is true Jnani. So, do these verses sort of correlate and support Mayavad? Krishna says, one who knows this body is the Kshetrajna, and I am also the Kshetrajna who knows all bodies. So, if there had no, Krishna had just slipped out one cha, it would have supported Mayavad. But that cha makes a huge difference. See, if I say, one who owns this house, one who owns this house is the mayor of the city. See? Or one who owns this house is, basically what Krishna is saying is that one who owns this house is the owner. Something simple he says. One who knows is the Kshetra is the Kshetrajna. He says, that's what he says. One who owns this house is the owner. But then the next line says, he who owns this house is also the owner of everything. So what does this mean? This can mean two things. One is that the owner of this house and the owner of everything else is the same. So that would seem to support Mayavad, isn't it? So the knower of this body, one who knows this body is a knower, and the knower of the body also knows all the bodies. That would seem to support Mayavad. But the real difference comes about because the position of the Kshetra. You know, he is also there. He is there also. Is there a difference between these two sentences? He is also there and he is there also. It's subtle. He
says that he's there also. He's also there.
That means
he may not be there.
No, first point is correct what you said. But the first point, you would like to explain what it means? First point is slightly different meaning. Exactly. So he's also there. Okay, A is there, B is there, he's also there. So we are talking about one particular place, and we are saying there are many people, and he's also one of them. But on the other hand, if you say he is there also, the meaning is very different. What it means? He is here and he is there also. So, the position of also can make a big difference. This is in English. You know, especially these are small descriptory words. They can change the meaning completely in sentences. I think I have something I can show you about this. This is a little intellectual sense gratification. Yeah, no, I'm just showing this something from generally from English grammar. It's just now how the total meaning of a sentence can change. How will I find it? Okay, I'll find it in the evening. I'll show you in the evening class. It'll take me a little time. A book on punctuation, Jayadvaita Maharaj has shown it to me. It's fascinating. So basically you just change the commas and everything else changes. Yeah, title. Okay. Most of you know this title. Okay. It's going to go crazy. Let's close some things here. Okay, so this, the title of this book is, that itself is a good illustration. The title of this book is Eat, Shoots and Leaves. So what does eat, shoots and leaves mean? So that is explained in the back cover of the book. The back cover there over there. So a panda walks into a cafe. So he orders a sandwich and eats it and then draws a gun and fires two shots in the air. Panda is, as you know, an animal. And then he walks and says, the caterer says, what happened? Why did you do that? So he says, look it up in the dictionary. The panda says. He says, what do you mean? So when he goes with panda, what is a panda? A large black and white bear-like mammal native to China. So what the dictionary was meant to say was, he that eats shoots and leaves. So it eats, like there are roots, there are shoots. So it eats, what all is it? Eats, shoots and leaves. But one comma is put. So it eats, shoots and leaves. The meaning changes completely. Is it clear? Sorry? Panda, okay. Okay. So anyway, the point which we're making is that unless one has a broad sense of the culture and the context, the meaning can often become messed up. So, the cha in this case, what does it mean? Krishna is telling over here that one who knows the body is the knower. But then he is saying, Kshetragyam cha apimam vidhi sarva kshetreshu bharata. So he's saying there is one Kshetragya who is in the body, and he's saying that Kshetragya knows this body. But he says that there is another Kshetragya, that is me, who is the knower of all the bodies. So the point is not that the two Kshetragyas are one. The cha also indicates that the way it is spoken, Kshetragyam cha apimam vidhi. So if it had been saying, you know, if that it had been referring to the same Kshetragya, it would have said that Kshetragya is also the knower of all the bodies. But I am also the Kshetragya, Krishna is saying. There's a difference between the two. And that difference is, we cannot go into the grammar over here, because we need to understand the rules of Sanskrit grammar. But Kshetragyam cha apimam vidhi sarva kshetreshu bharata. And Krishna says, one who understands the Kshetra and Kshetragya is actually the true knower. So this difference about the two Kshetragyas will become clear later on in the chapter. But essentially here, what is this whole concept of Kshetra and Kshetragya? Actually, all of us have a certain level of, certain field of influence. That means, I am, I'm in this body, so I can make my hand move. I can walk, I can go here and there. You can make your hand move. But I don't have as much control on your hand as I have on my hand. And you don't have as much control on my hand as you have on your hand. So I have a certain sphere of influence. And my sphere of influence is determined primarily by the body that I have. And the body that I have is determined by my past karma. So all of us have different spheres of influence. The sphere of influence is not just over the body, but also over the expertise with which we can handle the body. That means, you know, some people can dance very gracefully. Others dance a little clumsily. So why is that? They have the same body, but they don't have that same level of control. Some people can speak very fluently. Others, they speak haltingly, stammeringly. Why the difference? Technically speaking, just structurally speaking, we may not necessarily find a big difference between the voice boxes of the two. It's a subtle difference. It's actually, even if you want to dance also, it may be a person who may be very well built and well suited for dancing, but that person may be clumsy. Another person may be able to dance very nicely. So it's not just a matter of the physical structure. It's actually also the matter of the subtle kind of intelligence and the kind of control that the person has over the body as per the intelligence that is given by the super soul as per the previous karma, previous life's karma. So that's why different people have different abilities in spite of having very similar, being similar otherwise. In fact, this is one of the biggest problems which the reductionistic approach of science can't explain. If two twins are born and they are also monozygotic twins. Monozygotic means they are born from the same egg. So that means they have entirely identical genetic structure. Still, their behavior is different. Not just their behavior, their personality is different. Physically, they may appear similar, but their personality is different. If our personality were emerging from just our genes, then there should have been no difference. But there is substantial difference, and it has been documented again and again. So that indicates that the kshetragyata, you know, the capacity of knowing and controlling the body, that is not just determined by bodily structure and bodily capacity. There is something higher involved in it, something different involved in it. And that is the super soul's granting the soul that ability based on the karma of that soul. So any questions to learn about this? So this is the overview. So Arjuna asks 6 questions first. Then 2 to 7, Krishna answers the concept of Kshetragya and Kshetragya. That is 3rd and 4th question answered. Then 8 to 12, he answers Jnana and Gaya. He answers Jnana. 13 to 19, he answers Gaya. Then 20 to 26, he answers Prakriti and Purusha. And 27 to 35, it's Jnana Chakshu is basically brings it all together. All that he's been spoken, he just brings it together in a holistic view. So in this way, basically, he systematically answers Arjuna's questions. Now, while understanding this Kshetragya concept, there are basically, you could say, many different ways of understanding the absolute truth. So for example, you know, when I want to learn something, so we could go from I'll correlate this with vyasthi and samasthi with our normal way of functioning, then I'll explain these technical words. See, vyasthi and samasthi, what it simply means, from individual universal, Prabhupada would sometimes give the example that, you know, I have feelings, I have consciousness, I have desires, and I am a part of God. So if I have these, God should also have this. In another way, if we are persons, then God is our father, he should also be a person. It's from the individual, we go to the universal. That is called as Vyasthi. And in a practical sense, we also, Prabhupada would also give the example of Chanakya. He says, you can test how well rice is cooked by... You'd like to have a chair? You can sit here. So, you can sit here. So, Vyasthi, we all, Prabhupada say, if you want to know how well rice is cooked, take out some rice grains from it, touch them and see how well they are cooked. So, then also we can understand it. That's called Vyasthi. And so this in modern science or modern philosophy, it is also called, often called as the inferential approach. Inference means we observe some things and then from that we infer. I observe, say, 10 samples. Say, Newton observed a fruit falling. He observed once, twice, thrice, four times, five times, maybe 100 times. But maybe there's a pattern in this. So from this general, from the individual, we go to the universal. So this is not exactly Arohan and Avrohan, ascending and descending method. There's a substantial difference. I'll explain that shortly. But the point here is that we take individual and move towards the universal. That is the Vyasthi. This is the way of... Upanishads basically talk about this, the ways by which we can learn. So, not exactly, no. I'll come to that. See, basically, if I want to learn, how can I learn? I can look up, I can look around, I can look within. The three ways I can learn. Isn't it? What does it mean? Look within means, okay, I can think about my own nature, my own inclinations, my own longings, and then I can learn, okay. I'm like this, others also seem to be like this, so that's how things will be. So I can look within, this is called as the psychological approach to learning. I can look around. What does the world look like? What happens in the world? And then, by looking at the world, I try to infer. This is the naturalistic approach to try to acquire knowledge. And third is, look up. Look up means the revelational approach. Revelational approach means, okay, let me learn from somebody who knows. So psychological, naturalistic and revelational. Now, the Upanishads in and of themselves, they have a lot of discussions going on. So, the total sum of the Upanishads as a body of knowledge, that is considered a revelation, it's Shruti. But within that, there are different modes of acquiring knowledge that are discussed. And for example, when Indra and Virochana go to Brahma, and at that time they ask him various questions. So, and then gradually they come to certain learning. So when they are expressing their intermediate realizations, those are not considered revelations. Just like in the Bhagavatam, when some questions are asked, Parikshit Maharaj may give some intermediate answers. And Shukadeva Goswami says, okay, take another example, Ramananda Raya and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Ramananda Raya is giving certain answers, Ramananda is asking some questions, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is... basically, Ramananda Raya gives certain point and he says, what is the essence of all the scriptures? Oh, it is Varnashram Acharvata. He says, Iha Bahya Age Kahwar. This is okay. This is external. Tell me something more. So, what does this mean? Now, this whole conversation we consider to be a revelation. But within that, it is not that everything is the highest revealed truth. There is a progression. Okay, this is lower, this is high, this is higher, 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 like that. So, even when we quote scripture, we have to see the context of the scripture and then understand, okay, this is the conclusion of the scripture. This is the conclusion of the passage. So, we have to, even when we talk about revelation, revelation means the words coming from God. It's not that we can take what is within revelation out of the context. So, the Upanishads ultimately give a revelational approach. A revelational approach means that just... by the grace of the higher absolute truth, one gets in a mystical vision, one sees what is the truth and then one speaks it. But till they come to that, different approaches are used. So look within and look around. So looking within is more of introspection. So actually, in looking within, that is the, to some extent, Vyasthi approach. I just look within. And then I try to figure out, okay, who am I? What am I meant for? What should I be doing here? Or the other could be, I look without. I look without and I try to figure out what is happening around me, and then I try to figure out what is my position in what is happening around me. So ultimately both are meant to take us towards complete knowledge, but the starting point and the modality is different. So if I look inwards and try to acquire knowledge, that is vyasthi. So I focus on the individual, and from the individual I go towards the universe. On the other hand, I focus outside and then I try to learn about the world and then try to figure out where do I fit in this world. So that is samasthi. Now of course, in general, we may have certain analytical frameworks for explaining or understanding things. But specific passages in scriptures may not fall into those neat categories all the time. When I am thinking, it's not that, for example, if I have to give a class, if I say I have to talk to you a class on Mayavad. Now, it's not, when I want to think of points to speak, it's not that, okay, I think necessarily I have to think very systematic. Let me go over Bhagavad Gita and think, what are the verses on that? Then I go over Bhagavatam. Okay, what are the sections I can talk about Mayava? Then I go over CC. Then I go over, say, Shvetashvatara Upanishad. Then I go over Mundaka Upanishad. Then I go over Vedanta Sutra. Normally, our thinking does not necessarily go linearly like that. It can, but just we start thinking and sometimes, okay, this point comes, we write down the points and we connect the points and we speak it. So, real life thinking doesn't necessarily fall in neat analytical categories. Although, those neat analytical categories are helpful for us to give a direction for our thinking. Or let me give another example. When I speak, it's not that I think, okay, now I have spoken a subject, so now I have to speak a predicate. Now I have spoken a noun, now I have to speak a verb, and now I have to speak adjective or adverb. When I'm speaking, I don't think these things. But if I want to speak effectively, or I want to speak or write effectively, then I need to have a working knowledge of this. I need to have a working knowledge of what are the parts of speech and how they come together, so that there can be effective communication. But generally, the way of thinking we focus on when the thinking doesn't make sense. See, if what I'm thinking makes sense, then okay, this point, and you won't have to think about the way I'm thinking. But when what I'm saying doesn't make sense, then whatever is the way? What is the connection between this point and this point and this point? So we start thinking about just like, you know, when the best use of grammar is such that you don't notice the grammar itself. So similarly, the best thinking is such that we don't really have to think, okay, what is the connection between this? What is the connection between this? It just flows naturally. So in a sense, you know, a person's grammar is like the person's dress. You know, when a person's dress is as we expect it to be, normal, then we can get along with other things. But if some person is dressed in some abnormal way, you know, why is this person dressed like this? You know, the thought keeps going that direction. Is something wrong, or is it intentional? Is it unintentional, or is some message we got from this kind of dressing? So like that, in a sense, just as we have dress for our body, the grammar is the dress for our language. And similarly, modes of analysis is like the dress for our thinking. So actually our real life thinking doesn't necessarily go through a specific mode in a conscious way. It's not that I consciously try to keep my grammar right. When I'm speaking, when I'm expert enough in my speech, then naturally the grammar will be good enough. So when we look at these sort of modes of analysis, then vyasthi and samashti, the point here is not that anybody, when they start thinking, now they think, okay, now I will think about vyasthi, now I will think about samashti. Some specific occasions may stimulate that kind of thinking. But in general, thinking is more organic. Thinking is more holistic. It is not so discrete and categoric. It's more unified. But these are the broad ways in which thinking happens in the Vedic culture. Now, why are we talking about this? Because this is intricately related with 13.2 and 3. 13.2 is talking first about the Kshetrajna, who is the local Kshetrajna, the individual Kshetrajna. And 13.3 is talking about the universal Kshetrajna. So this is the Atma and the Paramatma. So what does Krishna do over here? First he talks about the Atma, then he talks about the Paramatma. And then he says, one who understands all this, that person is the knower. That person actually knowing, understanding all this is knowledge. So let us see how Krishna correlates and unifies all this in the later verses. Any questions about his Vyasthi and Samashti? Yeah?
Everyone has a different way of taking, like, one Bhagavatam class speaker asked us to give an example. Some people think an example from their own life, some pick it up from external world. Is it like that? Where you start thinking, where you approach a question from?
Yes. So, in a Bhagavatam class, if somebody asks for example, I can give from my life, I can give from the outside world, the different ways. You could put roughly, yeah, that's one way of looking at it, the starting point. Starting point of our thinking, basically.
In a place of thinking or analysis,
okay, you could put it more as knowledge acquisition. So it's, you know, it's knowledge acquisition in terms of knowledge acquisition through analysis. It's more of analysis, correct? Because analysis is ultimately meant to culminate in knowledge. So the difference between this and Arohan and Avrohan, or inductive and deductive methods, what you said, Anuman and Shabda, that actually both these are modes of thinking which can be done through Anuman and they can be done through Shabda also. That means, in my inference, I can go from personal to universal, or in my scriptural study, I can go from personal to universal. How can I go in my scriptural study from personal to universal? By thinking, okay, this verse means this to me. What will this verse mean to others? It can mean different things. But depending on that person's psychology, depending on that person's nature, you can think, okay, this can mean like this. So, these are basically modes of thinking. Just like a simple example is Sanskrit as a language. Sanskrit as a language can be used for composing scripture. It can also be used for composing mundane literature. Isn't it? The language is a method for structuring and communicating thought. So, the language can be used for various purposes, mundane or spiritual. Similarly, these modes of thinking, they can be used either to understand scripture, to analyze the world through scripture, or to make inferences and to analyze the world using our own inferences. So it can be, they can be used for both Anuman as well as Shabda. Is it clear? Clear now? Yeah. There's a lot in this chapter, we'll discuss it gradually as we forward. Tat kshetram yachya yadrukcha.
Kshetram yachya yadrukcha.
Yadvikari yatashchayat. Yadvikari yatashchayat. Sachayo yat prabhavascha.
Sachayo yat prabhavascha.
Tat samase name shrunu.
Tat samase name shrunu.
So, now Krishna is describing what all he will talk about in this chapter. So, in a sense, this is again technical. Krishna will describe this. I'll talk about this little, too many concepts here, okay. So, 13.4 is like a prelude to the full chapter. Tat kshetram yachya yadrukcha. Yad vikari yatascha yad. Sachayo yat prabhavascha tat samase nameshrunu. Tat kshetram. So, that is explained in verse 6. Yachya yadrukcha esa yad vikar, what is it? Sorry. Yachya yad vikari yatascha yat. So, yad vikari, what all changes and undergo, that's explained in 7 and 20. Yatascha yat, where it is produced from, that will be explained in the 6, 21, 22. Sachayo yat prabhavascha tat samasena me shrunu. So, what exactly is the Kshetra and Kshetrajna? The identity of them is explained in 14, 18 and 23. And then its Prabhava, its influence is explained in 14 to 18. So here, when Krishna is talking about Kshetrajna, he is referring to both Kshetrajnas. He is referring to both the Atma and the Paramatma together. And we'll discuss this a little bit more. This was, this chapter, as we have discussed earlier, is a very analytical chapter, and it will require some endeavor to understand it. Let's move forward. You want to note this down? Okay. Tat kshetram yaccha yadrukcha yadvikari yatascheyat sacho yoyot prabhavascha tat samasena meshrunu. Now Krishna will describe in two verses an analysis of the kshetra. So first he describes the kshetra, and then he describes the way the kshetra undergoes changes. Mahabhutani ahankaro. Sorry, Rishibhir, okay, that's next verse. Rishibhir bahudha gitam. Chandobhir vividhai pruthak. Chandobhir vividhai pruthak. Brahma sutra padaishaiva.
Brahma sutra padaishaiva.
Hetu madbhir vinishchitai.
Hetu madbhir vinishchitai.
So, he's saying that actually what I'm going to speak, it has been spoken earlier. And who has spoken? Rishibhir bahudha gitam. That it has been spoken by many people in the past. The Rishis have spoken it. This analysis of Kshetra and Kshetraka especially is done by Parashar Muni. And Chanda bhir vividhai spritak. So Chanda can refer to meters, but it can also refer to Chanda, can Chandogya Upanishad. Chanda, that same root comes over there. This analysis also done in Chandogya Upanishad. And Brahma Sutra Padaishchaiva. Brahma Sutra is Vedan Sutra. Hetu Madbhir Vinishchitai. So all this we have discussed. And then he will explain what it is going to be talked about. So Mahabhutanyahankaro.
Mahabhutanyahankaro.
Buddhiravyaktamevacha.
Buddhiravyaktamevacha.
Indriyanidashaikamcha.
Indriyanidashaikamcha.
Panchachendriyagocharaha. Iccha dvesha sukham dukham sanghatascetanadhruti etat kshetram samasena savikaramudarutam. So he's describing first line, first verse describes what the kshetra comprises of, and second verse describes what are the changes that happen in kshetra. So he describes basically the 24 elements of Sankhya, which Kapila talks about it in the third canto, chapters 25 to 35 roughly. Mahabhutani ahankaro. Mahabhutani refers to the five great elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether. Ahankar is ego. Buddhir avyaktamevacha. Avyakta refers to pradhan. And then, so Mahabhutani is five elements. Ahankar is sixth element. Buddhir is seventh element. Seven elements. Then Indriyani Dashaikam cha. Dashaikam is 11. That makes it 18. And then Panchacha Indriya Gocharaha. That makes it how much? That is 23. So now the 24th element is? Not three modes of mortal nature. Actually, there is generally speaking, the Mahabhutani Ahankaro. Indriyani Dashaikam includes the mind also, because five modes. So 11 plus 6, 5 is 16. 16 plus 5 is 21. Yeah, I think I made a mistake. Mahankar, Buddhir, and Avyakta. So that's 24 properly. So first line has got 5 plus 1, 6. Second line has got 2, 8. Third line has got 11. That's 19. And last line has got 5, 24. These are the elements of Sankhya. Now, Krishna says then, what is the Savikaram? Vikaram is the transformations. So this is interesting. Normally we would categorize these as, say, emotions, which we normally consider to be as features of consciousness which come from the soul. Isn't it? But Krishna is saying not only Ichha, Dvesha, Sukha, Dukkha, but he also says Chetana. Chetana is consciousness and Dhruti is determination or resolution. That all these are the Vikar. Etat Kshetram Samasena Savikaram Udharutam. So Kshetram Samasena refers to the first 6 verse and Vikaram refers to 7 A and B. So why is consciousness considered to be a Vikar of the Kshetra? Now Srila Prabhupada's whole book is there, Life Comes From Life, which says consciousness comes from the soul, a living person, not from matter. Life doesn't come from matter. But Krishna seems to be telling over here that Chetana is a Vikar of the Kshetra. Consciousness is a transformation. Vikar means transformation. It's a transformation of matter. How do we understand this? Actually, if we look at what Krishna is telling over here is, he's talking about emotions that are expressed in the material world. You remember earlier I had talked about the difference between chit and chitta. You know, sat, chit, ananda. So that chit is simply C-I-T. And chitta is C-I-T-T-A. So what is the difference between, does anyone remember? Long ago we had discussed. Is somebody?
Mind.
Not exactly. I mean, okay. It's on that track. It's like, say, I am sitting here. Then I start watching a movie on my computer. So when I am sitting here, I can be conscious of many things apart from the computer. But if I start watching a movie or I start playing a video game on the computer, movie is just passive, but video game is a little more active. Or better still, I get into a virtual reality setup where I am driving a car on the computer. You know? So at that time, although I can be conscious of various other things, at that time my consciousness gets riveted into the video game. And if I have a full setup, by which, you know, I have brakes at my legs and I have a contraption which seems like a steering wheel, so I move that in my hands and then I see the car moving over there. I press this and then I see that being the vehicle slowing down over there. And then there are virtual reality setups where you, actually when the car is moving fast, I can even feel the whistling of the wind in my ears. They can create that sort of simulation. So then at that time, my consciousness will get completely rooted into that virtual reality. And then whatever emotions I experience, if I suddenly see a huge truck boring down on me, I scream in fear. So when I try to just whiz my car out of the way, now all that I am experiencing is for me real. But although nothing is happening to me, at that time I feel as if it is actually happening to me. So my consciousness of the whole world around me, that is chit. And when my consciousness gets rooted within that virtual reality, so this world, so Atma is somewhere here inside, but the Atma's consciousness is now rooted into the material world. So that consciousness which is rooted within matter, that is called as chitta. So now all the vikar that happens, if I win a race in my virtual game, I may become jubilant. If I lose, I may become dejected. All these emotions are virtual in a sense. They are not exactly necessarily related with my core nature. Because of identification with that video game, they have been created. So, Krishna is telling over here that whatever material emotions that we experience over here, Ichha, Dvesha, Sukham, Dukkham, Chetana and Dhruti, all these are Kshetra Vikar. So here when he is talking about Chetana, he is not talking about the original consciousness of the soul. He is talking about the consciousness of the soul as it is rooted in the material world. And that consciousness varies according to the stimuli. In the Uddhava Gita, the example is given that this example comes also in Vasudeva's teachings to Kamsa. He says that there is a moon in the sky and the moon is reflected in the river. So when the river moves because of the wind and the waves, the river surface, then the moon seems to flicker. Actually nothing has happened to the moon, but the moon seems to flicker. Similarly, example that the Atma is always transcendental, but because of changes in material existence, the Atma gets affected. So like that, the effect that happens, apparently happens to the Atma, because the Atma is currently, is consciousness currently rooted in matter, that is called the Kshetra Vikara. So Ichha, Dvesha, Sukham, Dukkham that is talked about over here is the Kshetra Vikara, when the Atma becomes attached to matter. So Udharutam, this is known as the transformation. Is this clear? Any questions about this? Yeah. Can there be more qualities? Yes, definitely. So in the Uddhava Gita, Krishna tells Uddhava that different thinkers have analyzed material existence. Some say that there are 9 elements in it, some say there are 15 elements, some say there are 24 elements, some say there are 21 elements. And he says, their expertise in analyzing the material world in different ways pleases me. So he says that basically the idea is, depending on analysis, depending on the way we analyze, things can be classified into various categories. So here when Krishna is giving emotions or the transformations of the chetana within matter, he is giving broad categories. That means, see, within sukha and dukkha, you know, I can say I am happy, or I'm miserable. But within miserable, I'm sad, I'm lonely, I'm devastated, I'm heartbroken, I'm anguished, I'm frustrated, I'm outraged. Now all these in a broad category are negative emotions. So I could put all of them within unhappy or miserable. So, but broadly, see, our interaction with this material world is in two ways. Either I'm attracted to something or I'm averse to something. So Ichha and Dvesha, and according to the Ichha and Dvesha I have, there is Sukha and Dukkha. Essentially, so these two are the, Ichha and Dvesha are basically the two modes in which I approach matter. And Sukha and Dukkha are the two primary ways in which the world affects me. Within this there can be many categories further. And then further, for both these to be there, there has to be this background of chetana. My consciousness has to be within the video game, then I can experience joy or I can experience sorrow. Chetana. And dhruti in this case refers to, how does Prabhupada translate dhruti over here? Conviction, yeah. Determination or conviction. Dhruti, there are three kinds of dhruti I talked about in the 18th chapter also. This dhruti, he says, refers to the mode of thinking that a person has. Prabhupada gives the example that a hog finds stool likable. A human being finds stool abominable. So that is a broad conviction about life. So our body itself, body by body, I refer to physical body and mental body, both of them together give us a certain kind of conviction about what life is and what is to be done with life. That's what is referred to over here. Clear? We'll continue in the evening. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jai. Jitai Gaur Premanandi.